Okay, so today we're going to go through the Rosh Hashanah. I have no specific substantive agenda on the whole, so I really just want to have the experience of reading through some of the Rosh Hashanah with you, and maybe we'll make a few methodological points. But the goal was simply for you to have seen all the Rosh Hashanah, so that you now have a basic survey of the interpretational options in the sugya outside of the Rambam. And hopefully the plan is that by Monday, we'll go through the Rambam and his various manifestations, and that will give us possibly one other entirely different approach to the sugya. And then we can start looking at contemporary tshuvot and articles and evaluating them. So we'll start with Rashi. And I'm just interested in the experience of reading Rashi rigorously. I love Rashi. I love Rashi. So it's just always fun. You know, there are a few things in life I enjoy more than reading Rashi and Gemara thoroughly. So it will indulge me. Okay, so we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that if you find kelim, right, and those kelim have on them a tzura of the chama, then the kelim are forbidden. So Adina, what does Rashi add by saying mazal?
He connects this Mishnah to what Rashi says later.
Right? And what does he say about it?
So that Rashi is complicated.
So you think the purpose of the Rashi, of Rashi here, is to tell us that by Tzurat Chama, he means the same thing as Mazal Chama in Rashi. Right? And he resolves the problem, how can Rashi say called Tzurat Mutarot when the Mishnah says, right, says Tzurat Chama is forbidden? That's what he's trying to do?
Way of representing the sun, and not just like the circle with lines, but the sun, God, or
other ways. Uh-huh. So you think anyway, you think what he means by mazal chama is anything intended to be the sun. Mm-hmm. So how about the word sun?
Anything that's a picture.
Aha. Anything whose, now we have an interesting thing distinguishing between pictures, right, between pictures and lists. So why is a non-linguistic representation of the sun worse than a linguistic presentation of the sun if they're both visual? And neither Apollo, right, neither a picture of Apollo as a really large man with mediocre acting skills, or the particular Star Trek episode, really mediocre acting skills, or when they meet Apollo, or the letters S-U-N bear any resemblance to the disc we see in the sky. So why is Apollo more forbidden as a representation of the sun than the word sun? So we'll take the marginal case. Let's suppose that I write down on a piece of paper, for the purposes of this class, a triangle equals represents the letters S-U-N. So now I no longer have letters. It's a picture of a triangle. So is any representation of the sun I make up, right?
Aha,
it has to be communicative. Right. Right, so that's what I'm saying, like a hieroglyph. Right, so I'm trying to figure out exactly what you're saying, it sounds like to me, is you think that there's a difference between a picture and language, and any picture that, so what does the picture have to make the audience think of?
The way that it's more than just I guess it's done in a way that it's more than just something that God created.
Uh-huh. So...
Which would be the chashad. Like, the sun is something that would be like chashad for a Vodazara.
Which the sun itself is not. So let's have NASA, right, some kind of National Geographic photo of the sun. That would be fine, or that would be the worst possible thing? So
that's interesting, because we don't think that in a Vodazara animal, but we also don't think God created it.
We don't? We,
I mean,
society. Okay, yes, Rachel, what do you want to say?
I just wanted to say, I think that it's saying, Rashi's not saying you can't have any sun or any moon, because, you know, the denotation of that is simply the sun or the moon. However, the connotation of having a mazal, i.e. a sun and a moon represented in such a way that other people represent them as a means of worshipping them, that connotation with them is asur. And therefore, I think that the Gemara is speaking to its contemporary audience and saying to them, we all know what this looks like. You know, if I want to draw a cross in order for it to be, you know, a sign, like an asterisk, well, maybe you'll know that in context. But if I just drew a picture of a cross, no one would assume that I was just drawing a cross because I want to.
Okay, so you want, right, so let's start. The first exegetical question is, is Rashi adding mazel to tzura or replacing, or replacing tzura with mazel? All right, that's the. Why are you laughing at me?
No, the word tzura is a loaded word.
Okay, all right. So I think that's the first exegetical question: is, do you understand Rashi as adding or replacing? I tend, yes, Maria.
Given that Rashi later has sort of differentiation between kartuf and,
uh-huh,
I would almost want to say that he sort of sees them all as categories, and that he's using it more explanatory here. That he would want to call the category of Haman Mana the category of Mazal. So he's sort of setting up that.
Okay, he's saying that, but I think he's also trying to prevent the misinterpretation, right? You would think that Tzura means the same thing it does on the bottom of the page, right? That's right, that's exactly right. So I'm telling you that Tzura doesn't mean the same thing it will mean elsewhere. Here, Tzura means Mazal. Yes, Yehuda?
I think Tzura, for Rashi, at least from what we saw, is the most general word, very differentiated. It can mean almost anything.
I would tend to agree with that, right? Rashi thinks Tzura is a generic term, although that generic term, right, is a generic term which also has, right, has a specific meaning when defined in contrast to something else.
I don't think so. I think it's just generic term, and only if the word that's Tzura later is because everything seems to have been eliminated. So what are we saying?
Okay, let's hold that for now.
Yeah, hold on.
Okay, let's hold that for now. All right, but what I want to suggest first of all is that when you read Rush, right, so when I present this to high school students, right, if I were presenting them the Gemara as the Gemara according to Rashi, which is the way I like to do it, where they see the Gemara according to Rashi before they see the Gemara, so I would take the word Surah out of the Mishnah. Right, because I think that the way Rashi wants to read the Gemara is as if it said, Hamotse Kelim Ve'alehem Mazal Chama O Mazal Levona O Mazal Levona. Now, you may ask, if that's so, what's the obvious problem with that?
Well, I was going to say, I think it might be an inauthentic representation of what the original text meant to convey. Because the original text, although it meant to convey the same message, it was understood at its time that it clearly, when it said Surah Faman Levan, not the only way it would be a problem was if it was a mazal.
According to Rashi, right? So Rashi's trying to prevent that. If you read said Surah in a different world, right, it means something different. So Rashi says
right.
Replace it, right? Because in medieval Europe,
yeah, so that's the only way they'll understand it. So I'm just saying that I think then you sort of lose out on the original text, which therefore you realize in their culture it was already understood.
Sure, yep, that's right. Again, pedagogically, then I give them the Gemara without Rashi, and they have to figure out, right? It's just so they can see what Rashi accomplished. The problem is the Gemara is fully aware of this, so why, what justifies Rashi in, what justifies Rashi in believing that the word that they meant by this mazal. So Rachel wants to suggest everybody understood that the only thing that could possibly be forbidden by Surah Hama is a mazal, and it's only later that we make this misunderstanding. But the actual motivation for Rashi, exegetically, the reason he thinks he can say this and nonetheless, is that a darkon is not a mazal. A darkon is not a mazal. So the Mishnah needs to give a generic term to cover these three things. Right, the word mazal won't cover them because there is no such thing as a mazal drakon.
Where is
there a mazal drakon? It depends what a drakon is.
Is there a zodiac sign?
No.
There's no dragon zodiac.
And there's a whole debate about what this drakon is. But I think Rashi working on the assumption that a drakon is not a mazal. Right, it's not a planet. And it's not a That's what a mazal is. Mazal is a planet, not a constellation.
Right?
It is. Yeah.
Wait. So, what's the seven top of the Beelzebub?
I don't know.
No, because there's 12. There's a 12 mazal.
Yeah, those are all constellations. Some of them are constellations, but
well,
I think.
Because there's 12 of them are not planets. There's not 12 planets.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's the word mazal comes to mean that, but I think in rabbinic Hebrew generally.
Oh.
I think a mazal is a planet, I think. And we'll see it's Saturn, right? Saturn is one of the examples that the Rishonim give.
Okay.
Right? It's an old man, right? Saturn
I
is
mean,
a
it could be generic term that covers all planets.
Or it could be a generic
term.
Yeah. Okay.
It definitely also refers to.
Okay.
What's important is that they represent something.
Well, I think some people put it to the zodiac. Lo chashuv. For our purposes, I think the purpose is I don't think there is a mazal drakon for Rashi, and therefore, what Rashi claims is that because the Mishnah has to be efficient, so it wants to, it has to use one word, it uses the word surah, which is a generic term, but you should understand that with regard to Chama Levana, it does not mean literal representations, but rather it means symbolic representations, probably symbolic representations not of the physical object, but symbolic representations of the metaphysical object.
You take those in different midrashim, your mouth will clearly.
Okay. I think this is very late though, but okay.
Mazal Nisan is Mazal.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is very late though. I don't know when it shifts. Pardon?
So actually on Raising
the Lazar. Yes, Yitzchutzni. Well, yeah, that's not outside his constellation. That's outside his astronomical constellation. Right, that's out of the way the planets are aligned. Right. Zodiac and astrology are not exactly the same thing. So
well,
isn't
astrology the combination of both?
Yes. Okay. Let's back it because I'm not sure which one we need here. Maybe it means all of them. I think that mazal chama and levana are opposed for Rashi are opposed to drakon, which is why Rashi says mazal chama v'chein levana. He does not say anything about drakon. Right. Rashi only comments this, right? He comments about Chama, and he feels compelled to say the same thing about Levana, but he leaves out Drakon entirely. Why? Because a Drakon is literal. Right? It's the picture of a Drakon, whatever that is. But the Chama Levana, he goes out of his way to tell you that it's not that. And Pashtus, that means that this would not be true of an actual Surah. Now, that does not end the question, though, because it may... Again, a Mazal is not a Surah of the round object. Right, the reason Rashi has to say mazal as opposed to surah because he doesn't think this refers to a picture of the sun. It refers to a recognized symbolic representation of the sun.
It's just a categorical word. When we're talking about surahs of things in the sky, we use the word mazal.
Then Rashi doesn't need to tell you this. Right? So I would argue. Right? Rashi's changed the reason...
Just for the end of the Gemara.
See, it's just there, so you'll recognize that. But again, see, at the end of the Gemara, I don't think Rashi thinks the word mazal chama can mean a disc. Right? That's what I mean. I don't think the word. But I think it doesn't answer the question of Rashi thinks it's forbidden or permitted, because Rashi could be saying that this is a halacha that relates entirely to things found on kelim. Right? Rashi may fully believe that a freestanding picture of the sun. Right, is perfectly capable of avodah zarah, but when you draw it on kelim, it's not that way. Right, on kelim, the only things that are used, right, that are likely to have been worshipped is a mazal. So I don't know. I think that's what Rashi is doing in the Mishnah. You should understand what the Mishnah is talking about is a mazal, not a tzirah. but not a I guess what you call a literal representation, however you use that word. But I don't think that tells you what his context is. Okay, and he goes on to say, Rabbanan hi, the Amri kol sh'art slamim mutarin, the Gemara farish meishnahachi. So on what basis does, right, so what does Rashi accomplish here, right? What does he need to say by that sentence? Right. What would you have thought if it wasn't the Rabbanan? You would have thought it was?
Reimer.
Who says?
Slamim are all asurim.
Except? Does Reimer say kol slamim, period? Okay, so Rashi tells you, right, so now the way to reconcile that Mishnah with Reimer, of course, is to say that it's Tirah Mishnah and Tzal Mishnah. Right,
or to say
Vandat Mishnah
Mishnah.
So whatever, to say the claim that Mishnah is talking about a category of representations that does not include the Tzurah, or even for Rashi does not include the Mazal. Right? So Rashi rejects that, and he says, no, right, no, this Mishnah depends on the claim that not all Slamim are forbidden. Right? The figure is, why is there a necessary connection? Right? Why doesn't he distinguish? Right? Why doesn't he just quote the Okimtas, as you say, right? If really there's an Okimta about Andartya Shal Malachim Shaninu, right, this is obviously not an Darti Shamalachim, it's a Keli. Right, so we have to figure out what drives Rashi. Right, particularly since it shouldn't dramatically affect my understanding of the Mishnah. Right, I can understand the Mishnah perfectly well either way, by itself. Right, so Rashi has to be going out of his way to tell us something here. Okay, and we get to the Gemara, and Rashi has a comment on Tari Lahu Palchilu. So, all right. So here, Jonathan, why don't we? I never call you, so I'll call you this time. What is this Rashi doing? What does it say?
The first one, the second.
Well, why don't you figure out what they're connect? Tell me what's going on in both of them together.
Together.
Yeah, by all means.
Okay, fine. So Amar Abai, Yislach will call them the Mashkechi Palfi. Misvika will gozer Rabban Nalayu. Dim Kain in Lecha Hamutar. Right.
Yeah.
So first Rashi is explaining, right, why it is that, and even though we could potentially have forbidden everything in the world, right, because ostensibly we want to author anything which someone else served as in the Avodah Zarah.
Yeah.
Right. We're not going to, unless it's something that we're not going to author everything.
Okay. We're not going to because.
Because then everything would be authored.
And that just can't be.
Right. I don't think there's anything more to that logic except for everything cannot be uttered.
And if we're Chayesh Lemiyuta,
right,
which right, he framed Chayesh Lemiyuta as Gozer Mishum Safek, which is a different standard, because I might say a real standard, we might just call it a realistic standard, right, likely to have been worshipped, right? But Rashi says, no, right, that the argument here has to be that once being Chayesh Lemiyuta means making everything a Safek. And making everything a Safek means that means that you make everything author, right? So, well, the rules are the rabbis can't author every utensil in the world. Good to know there are rules.
Okay. Right, so instead we take the assumption that, right, even though people will serve everything, will potentially serve anything,
right,
that there's only some things that they will fashion and serve.
Right.
Hilka, sayri luhu miyaser, umifla hilka sayrilu, right? Therefore they fashion it. Miyatzer umifla, they will create it, they will fashion it, create it, whatever, and serve it. The sayer surah kedela avda, and they will whatever, fashion, draw, and whatever word you want to use. Not entirely.
Isn't it, haven't we used a lot of words?
What?
Haven't we used a lot of words in this, like the last six words?
Is to
like hilka, so let's try parsing that again, right? Right, just so, because I didn't follow it at all, right? Tell me why each word was necessary.
Right, okay, so, right, going back to the Gemara,
yeah.
Right, we say, right, Mislach, we'll call the Mafalchi Palchi, right? What is it? We're on the Yatzer, what is that line? The Yatzer. Ani, Yatzer, and the Palchi, right?
Yeah.
Right, so, right. Mifalat will call the Mashli Palchi, Miyatsar Mifalchi, Hana Pasat Hashivei Tzairi Lu Palchi, Lu Minachin Nei Linoi Ba'alma Abiru.
Right, okay.
Right, so Rashi is going by, right, he's, so first he's saying, right, it's not, right, why is it that these things aren't just things that people will fashion, these are the things that people fashion for the express purpose of worshipping, right?
Right.
Right, Hilkoff, Tzairi Lu, right, this is why we they fashion.
What is why?
What?
These so do you think Hilchach, right? So
these are the type of things that people make in order to, so in order, because they want to serve it, they will go out of their way to make it.
Aha, so the antecedent that Hilchach is X there for Y. So you're translating, right, the Hilchach Tzairi Lu is because they want to worship it, therefore they fashion it.
Yeah, that's where he starts, right, by saying, right.
So Hilchach is not a continuation from the Gemara, right, it starts a new, it's right, it actually starts a sentence with therefore. Right, it's in Old English. Therefore they make it, right? Therefore they make it because they wish to worship it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on.
Right. Well, you could say it says Tyre little healthy little.
Right. They make it and they worship
it.
They
want to worship it, therefore they make it.
Right.
They make it in order to. So they make it, they make it and worship it. In order to explain the make it, we go back and we say therefore, right? That right, they work it, they worship it, therefore they made it.
Right.
Okay, let's go on.
I mean, it's the type of thing that they will create for it because they want to worship it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
But not necessarily, because it's saying, we must think of it, there could be a doubt that you could get to worship anything, that you could create something and then be brought to worship.
So no, the assumption of the Gemara, right, as Rashi understands it, is that, right, people will potentially take anything and worship it.
Right.
Right? But
After the fact.
Right, post facto,
right.
But not ab initio.
So right. Hilchot Tzairi Lehu means, and that's why they make these, why do they care why they made these kind of objects?
I think it's purely a statistical thing, right? If this is the type of thing that people will create to right, that they create, when they create it, it's because they want to worship it, then if you find it, likely it was created for the purpose of work of worship.
So is the issue here that it was created for the purpose of worship or that it was actually worshipped?
Either or both.
Either or, well, actually worshipped. So the question is, things that are made for the purpose of worship are more likely to be, actually have been worshipped, or is it just that some
things that are made for worship, if you find them, is more likely to be defined as an avodah zarah. But either of those are true. Right, meaning something can be defined as avodah zarah because it was made for avodah zarah, whether or not it was ever. Well, no, it's not because in the right, because fine.
If you find it,
I'm going to love milsahi. But assuming,
well, that's what I'm asking. Is Rashi taking a position about that? If you find,
I don't think he is. So you don't have to take a position on hazmana milsahi or lav milsahi here, right? All you have to assume is that if you find something, right, at this point it is more likely statistically that this was worshipped than other objects. Right, you can assume that that's because Hasmana Milsahi, and therefore all things that are created for worship were
so
worship.
Let me ask the question this way. Right. I have a Gemara. Right, let's read it. Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Mitlach, Techol the Mishkeche Palchi. Worship, they worship anything they find. Meitzer of Palchi, right, creating and then worshipping. Hani Tlasi de Chashive, these three which are important. Tzari Lhu Palchi Lhu. They make it and then they worship it. Good. So what is Rashi Tilchach adding to the Gemara?
Right, it's not just that it's a thing that they will happen to worship, right? They could happen to worship anything.
Right.
Right? I mean, I think the thing, I think it's a statistical point, right, that because this is the type of thing that people fashion to serve, if you find it, it's more likely that it was served, or if you want to say Asmana Melsi, then I don't even have to get that far.
Because
the issue in the Gemara is defining something as avodah zarah.
But is there anything Rashi telling me anything I wouldn't have been able to get from the phrase Hani Tlasi de Chashivi Meitzer Lu Mefalki Lu? How could I have misunderstood that? The Gemara says these right. There are some things that they worship. The Gemara says literally translated.
Because you could have thought that other things they will never. Right.
I could have thought that before the Gemara told it to me, but if I had the text of the Gemara, I never had Rashi. What would this Rashi tell me that he didn't know?
The people who created the Kelim worship them. That there was something about, like, the makers of Sun Kelim, that they came to worship things.
You could have thought that even with Gemara, because you could have thought Lanai Ba'al Ma'abi means they always make it Lanai, and therefore it will never be. But that's not what he's telling you. He's telling you that, right, everything else really could be. Right? It could be they made it not Linoi. Right?
That's what the first Rashi told me when we spake it.
Right.
Right? And then the second Rashi comes and tells me, right, Hani Tlasi de Chashive, Tsarilu Palchilahu. Rashi says, Hilchach Tsariluin. Now where am I reading that after, right, I read the Gemara, right, these three things, now, in Rashi, before I read the Rashi, how am I translating the words? Hani Tlasi de Chashive, Tsariluhu Palchilahu.
Before you read Rashi?
Before I read Rashi. Because Rashi, that's a Dibra Matil. So I've read it before I get to Rashi.
Right.
So now tell me how I translated those words, which I will now translate differently because of Rashi. Right? What information will I know about those words after reading Rashi that I didn't know?
It's a cause, meaning that it's not they happen to create these and worship these. Right? It's that, right, you could have just said, right, these are the types of things that, right, people create for worship more often. He's saying, no, it's that these are the type of things that people want to worship and therefore create it. Right? That it, right, it starts with the fact they want to worship it and moves backwards.
Uh-huh. Hold on a second. Let's read it all the way through and see if we can get it in the words.
Right.
So Hilchach Tsarilu, that's why they make them.
Right. Miyatzer Miflach, right? They create it and worship it.
So, right. Therefore they make it, meaning they create it and then worship it.
Right.
Suppose we skip those two words. Would anything change? We just said Hilchot Tsarilhu. Would anything change in the Rashi? We skipped the words Miyatzer Miflach and we get to the next sentence.
Yeah, because you could, if you assume... Right,
well, let's go on.
If you assume Hazman Allah Miltahi, right, you have to assume that we got to the point of worship.
So Hilchot Tsarilhu, therefore they make them.
Right, but now...
Meaning, they make them and then they worship them. Right, so Rashi didn't say Hilchot Tsarilhu Kedei LeMiflach. He didn't say that. He said Hilchot Tsarilhu Meitzer Miflach. We have to write all the connectives.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on.
I'm saying, meaning that's a different, right, it's... First, right, Hilchach Tsarilu,
yeah,
right, is explaining that Tsarilu Upalchilu, right, has a Hilchach, right, that they are connected, right, they're connected, right, causally, right, that I create it so that I will worship it,
uh-huh,
and then he's telling you what happens, right, because if he didn't worship it...
Good, let's go on, next phrase.
Right?
Meitzer Miflach, right, you create and you worship, yeah.
Right, the Tsayer Tzura, Kedei Lahavdah.
When did Tsayer Tzura, we already said, therefore you make the object, you make it in order to worship it. Now it has, what does the Tzayir Tzura mean?
Right, that's when you put, right, you create the Kli, you know what, and put the, right, the Tzura on it.
So I'm just,
right.
It sounds to me like the English translation of what the sentence is, right? I'm trying to give you a hard time, but I think it's for real. Right? I think the English translation you have said so far is, therefore they create it, meaning they create it and then worship it, meaning they create it, and then they worship it. No? Doesn't that sound like really awfully wordy?
Yes, it does.
And doesn't it require you to like put in all sorts of grammatical connectors that aren't there? All over the place?
I mean, I'm not sure that... I do think it's wordy, and I do think you've got to write it down.
Meitzer HaMiflach means the same... Tsarilu, Hilchach Tsarilu, and Meitzer HaMiflach, and Tsayer Tzura Kedei Lavda all mean exactly the same thing.
No, Tsayer Tzura does not mean... I mean, Miyatzer is from to create, the Tsayer is to paint. Right.
So now we're going sequentially, that's why you are mitzayeret. Which one is that, drawing or creating?
Mitzayeret is going on the kli.
So Hilchach Tsarilu, Hilchach Tsarilu, therefore you decorate it, Miyatzer, you form it, Umiflach, and you worship it. Now what does the lamed of Litzayer Tzura mean?
Right, so there really it should be, the problem is that Litzayer should be going on, right, I create the kli,
uh-huh,
so that I can paint on the kli.
Mm-hmm.
The Miflach, right, interrupts between, right,
uh-huh,
Miyatzer.
Uh-huh.
But if it reads with Miyatzer, it makes sense, right? You create the Kli so that you can draw that on it, which you are going to worship.
But your Miflach is in the middle. It shouldn't be there. It should be Hilchach Meitzer Mitzayre Tzure, the Miflach.
Well, because that's the quote from the Gemara. Mitzayre Miflach.
Yeah.
It goes together.
Good. Where is the quote in the Gemara? Relative to Dibra Hamaskil.
Really?
Ah. Right, Rashi is right. Now we're starting to get somewhere. The Yatzer HaMiflach is a quote from the Gemara that's after the Dibur HaMaskil. Right. It's before the Dibur HaMaskil. Right. So Rashi is explaining the Gemara out of order.
Parenthetical.
Okay. Now we can start together. Right. So the first thing to get is that in order to write, is that when you read Rashi, you always have to figure out when he's quoting the Gemara and when he's explaining. And any word from the Gemara is right is a quote and not part of the explanation, and has to be read. And right, so this is deceptive on my part, right? Where I gave you the Dibra Matzil, and then I gave you the rest of it as if it was just a quote. But the goal I want to get is whenever you read Rashi, you have to underline every word from the Gemara and assume that all that Rashi writes are the interstices. Right? Everything, right? And Rashi will, I will contend methodologically, Rashi always quotes the entire Gemara in order. Right? Any word that Rashi leaves, if the word of the Gemara doesn't appear in Rashi, it either means that there's an implicit v'chule, or he doesn't have it in his girsa. Because Rashi is supposed to be read not as a perush on the Gemara, but as a perush in the Gemara. Right, that's the conceptual point I want to make. So therefore, to me, right, it's not possible that Meitzer HaMitzvah is an explanation of Hilchos K'tari L'hu. Because Meitzer HaMitzvah is the Gemara. So this has to be a quote from Rashi, which we will then explain. And Hilchos K'tari L'hu being out of order, right, means that we're failing to understand something entirely. Okay, that's my contention.
I'm not convinced.
All right, let's go through it and see if we can find it. If we can find a way to resolve the redundancy.
Okay,
so we have Rashi says, Hilchach Tzarelu Palchiluhu. So Rashi says, Hilchach Tzarelu. Meister Amiflach, which I am now contending is a quote on the Gemara, right? Rashi explains, what does Meister Amiflach means? Letzairi Tzura Kedei La'avda. And then Rashi says, "Lahani tlas tichashivi luhu v'chule." Right now, in the Gemara as we have it, "Hani tlas tichashivi" also comes before the Dibra Matzil. Right.
Okay.
Right. So I can say that's just not plausible for Rashi. Right. What else? Right. There's no possible misunderstanding in the Gemara as we have it. Right. The words Meitzar Umiflach and the Dibra Matzil of Rat. Let's take Dibra Matzil as we have it. Tzairi Lul Palchilahu. There is nothing whatsoever in our Gemara that could refer to other than the Hani Tlas Techashivi. So the Gemara says, Hani Tlas Techashivi, Tzairi Lul Palchilahu. Right? So for Rashi to add on gratuitously at the end, Lahani Tlas Techashivi, is impossible. Right? There's no reason for Rashi to add those words in. It doesn't just ambiguate, it just wastes time. And it's right. It's just putting the beginning of the Gemara at the end. That doesn't make any sense.
Because the both of the latter two are the former two, right?
Right. That's right. Rashi, it can't be that Rashi would add the line Lahani Tlas Dechashivi, right, at the end of a sentence explaining a sentence in Gemara which began Lahani Tlas Dechashivi. There's no ambiguity. There's no nothing. It's just throwing an extra word.
If he has to quote the whole Gemara in order, then he has to get the word.
Yes, if he has to quote the whole Gemara in order, but that means the Dibra Matzil can't be there. In order for Rashi to quote the Gemara in order, you have to erase the Dibra Matzil.
Then you have to reinsert the Palchiluhu after as the Kula.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
Okay. The question is what is Hilchos K'tari L'hu mean?
Good. So now now we could take a look at the Rashi and say, right. So what I want to suggest is you have to read the Gemara. You have to read the Gemara with Rashi, and the way the Gemara reads with Rashi is Miflach. Right, Rashi says Miflach l'chol Amar Abaye Miflach l'chol the Mishkechei Palchi Mistake lo Gazer Rabbanan Alai Dimkain Ein Lecha Hamutar. Right, but then he has to say Meitzer Mifalchi L'tzayir Tzura K'dei La'avda L'hani Tlas T'chashivi. Someone has to read like that because it doesn't make any sense to me for Rashi to put this in at the end. But right, the challenge is if that's right, right? So still, what is Rashi entering by saying "Letzayir Tzura Kedela Avda Lahani Tlas"? I think that what he's doing, which is right, is that he's telling you that the ground is not what people. The issue is not what people are more likely to have worship, right? But Rashi is telling you that the ground because of what people have worship, people worship anything, right? And actually, it's no more likely that these objects were. It's not enough more likely that these objects were worshipped. than that random objects were worshipped, but these are usser because they were made to be worshipped.
I'm not convinced.
Okay. Good.
Especially, I'm not convinced simply because, right, this Gemara has not introduced the possibility, or has not introduced halacha, which may or may not be true at all, right, that something which is created for Avodah Zarah, which is never worshipped, is usser.
So right. I think that
that's
one of
the assumption, but if you assume Hazmar Lav Milti, it can be created for Avodah Zarah. If it's never worshipped and you found it, and it is not usser.
The violation of Latasin.
So for a guy to make it and then you to use it.
So that's an interesting question, right? So I want to contest. I think that Rashi putting in the Hilchach, right, is exactly right. He has to say Hilchach to tell you, right, that what matters in this Gemara is that's why they made it.
I still contend that's a statistical point here, because we have not introduced the possibility that something made for Avodah Zarah, it's not clear halakhically that something which is created for Avodah Zarah and never worshipped should
good.
Be usher.
So I'm counterclaiming. That's exactly what Rashi is doing. That's why he has to put in Hilchach, that's why he has to put in Kedei La'avda, right? That's why, because what's missing in the Gemara, right? The Gemara could be read as a descriptive statement. They make these and worship them. And Rashi says, no, they make these in order to worship them.
And I still think that was the case. You know, I'll be, if I were a Balatosvos, I would write, right, then that's how you understood the Gemara, then I would ask, isn't this a proof for Hazmana Milti?
Could be a Balatosvos.
Right, but it's not. And I don't think, I think there's no reason to assume that.
So I think it'd be interesting. Now, if this were right, we'd have to figure out why does Rashi feel compelled to read the Gemara that way? Right, that's an interesting question now. Right? If this were right, what is it about this Gemara that compels Rashi to take the position on this issue of Hazmana Milti? I don't think it's a generic question about Hazmana Milti, because I think it's a specific Avodah Zarah question.
Right, but I still don't think it's true. I think Rashi really is making a specific.
Okay, so we can have a disagreement. But I think the main point I want to make methodologically is that the Divrei HaMashkil is out of place, and that the Meitzer HaMishloach isn't part of Rashi's statement. The Meitzer HaMishloach is a quote. The Hani Tlas to Hashivi is quotes. We have as a comment of Rashi before, and two comments of Rashi, and a comment of Rashi in the middle. And the only word, the words that you have to interpret are Hilchuk Tzairi Lehu, Letzair Turakad, and Letzair Turakad Elavda. Those are the only words that Rashi comments. Right? Everything else is just a quote. Right? That's the methodological point I want to make. If within those parameters you still think that your interpretation is better, that's fine. Okay, but when you read it the first time, you read it as if he was saying the same thing three times. Right? And the second one can't be.
Okay.
Okay? That's the underlying.
Okay.
Yes, Ida.
I think the Gemara, both the Gemara and Rashi make more sense to say that these items, the mode of worship was the drawing. They didn't draw them and worship the drawing. They worshiped the deities by drawing them.
You think Kedei means, right, so Kedei doesn't mean so that you can do it later.
It does not mean to worship.
Yeah, so, right, so I get very clever, right? L'tzayir tzura k'day l'avdach. That's very clever. I don't believe it, but it's very clever, so I can't disprove it.
I don't know if I was trying to support it or disprove it. Because you think that's the mistaken reading you're trying to get rid of.
What did you get rid of it?
Right, I think because that would make sense. Also, why are you not allowing these things? What do you mean? Other things that they worship, they don't draw, they somehow find or whatever? How does that work? I'm saying, this is how they worship it. The drawing is the worship, which is why they're worshiping.
So I hear it, right? And if I could find any hint anywhere that anybody ever thought that drawing was a form of worship, in that, right, I would be fine with it. So
okay.
I'm waiting for the evidence. That's what I would say.
So I just know the way of understanding. Otherwise, so how else, how did the other deities come to be? Anything else that they worship? How did they come to be? No one made them?
Well, that's a general religious question. They were born, they were born from the...
obviously, they have to draw all their deities that they worship in stone.
No, they don't, but they don't. They don't. No, they don't worship, right? They don't worship these things. They worship the things that they represent. Right? There's no fetishism, right?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. They worship the things they represent by time.
That's
why it's
no, but again, that's an interesting model, right? That drawing the god is an action of worship, like fashioning the idol. Right? Fashioning the idol seems to be a mode of worship. Right? So drawing is also... It's clever. Right?
Except it's...
Well, he's going to read that as andiades, right? It's two verbs. Right? It's two verbs to describe a single object.
Right, but I don't. No, they both worship it and draw.
Yeah, that's how you could do it. You know there are other examples like that.
I know. It's unlikely.
I agree, it's unlikely. It's still clever. I can't, you know, then it becomes a question of chush, right? So I can say it's not my chush, but I can't impose my chush. Right? I don't, that, you know, clever.
Just to clarify, are we deleting the Gemara Matzah then from Rashi?
I would encourage that, but I still have to figure out why Rashi throws in the Hilchach, right, what the Hilchach accomplishes in the transition of the Gemara. So it may be that we delete it, it may be that there's another Girsa that we need to find.
Does Rashi never, ever, ever, ever cite out of order?
I will contend that the methodological principle that if he will do it, he will tell you he's doing it. Right? That would be my contention.
Then maybe either he had the Gemara out of order, or we have
Rashi
out of order.
All possible. All possible. And again, the underlying point I want to make over and over again is, right, though, is that really, when you read Rashi, right, the methodological technique is to underline the words of the Gemara, and the thing that we have to explain are the words that aren't in the Gemara. In the same way, in the first Rashi, when Rashi says Mazal Chama, there's no ambiguity about the word Chama. What he's really just saying is replace the word Tzura with Mazal. So you can to underline Chama. That's already in the Gemara. Right.
And the
chen, right? And the word bechen, right? Because they said right. Yeah. Okay. Right. And the manazim. I want to teach that as an approach to Rashi, because I think that very often Rashis are misunderstood because people read the Gemara as if it were Rashi. When a quote of the Gemara cannot have any meaning in Rashi because it doesn't add anything. Right. Is that right? You can't use a word of the Gemara to support your interpretation in Rashi because they're there already. Right, so quoting them is just repetition. Right, so you take the Gemara as a given, and Rashi puts words in.
This is a question of the order. Is it possible that Rashi finds it more helpful to explain the words "tzar v'pasul" first, because that's somehow a clearer explanation, and then he goes back and explains the other?
So I'm contending that, firstly, if he could find an explanation, it would make it better if you could figure out why. But I would argue methodologically that would be very unlikely. Right, very, very unlikely. Rashi would tell you he was doing that, or he would put the words in without explanation. And when you see that Meitzra Miflach is followed by Hani Tzlas de Chashivi, right, then you understand that what follows after that is just an explanation of the Gemara, and then you have to figure out, why is he taking the words at the end, at the beginning? It doesn't make any sense. I don't see how you can do it. Yes, Adina?
Oh,
no?
Sorry.
No hands? Okay. Okay. Fine. Then we have the mysterious fish. Yes, okay, good, so, right? Trust me, not at all. So the problem, of course, is the word Vidagim doesn't appear in the Gemara. Right?
It's not, in the Gemara, it's like the text Gemara. It doesn't have like a dot.
It's just a random
thing. Good, so read it out of the Dibra Maskul. Go ahead.
He just like wanted to give us a helpful...
Oh, it's just a random thing. And by the way, they eat worms if you stick them out of the did he really?
And that was just too odd.
Uh-huh.
It did not make any sense.
But no,
that was
I didn't even figure it was wrong because it didn't make any sense.
No, or maybe because somehow, like, Sagim can only be, what was it?
All right. Good. I confess that I have absolutely no explanation of this. Absolutely not. I just thought we should notice that there's a Rashi we don't understand a word of. I have heard that there are all sorts. Okay, you guys, you have 30 seconds to present your interpretation.
Okay. I think that the words he feels that since Patsuf includes every kind of animal, they have no idea what Tzura is making Mutar. Like they made everything Mutar. So he thinks that fish are not included in Patsuf. And therefore, there's something left. And he thinks that Sarakon is a sea monster.
Aha. Okay.
Right.
Right. The word Tzura can only refer to aquatics.
No, it can refer to anything. That's the problem. We've already made everything Mutar.
Patsuf can refer to everything.
What else is Ella Tzura? What else is there left?
What's to call
to me? No, but then you will say, if you will say, then, Dagim Lokari Patsuf, Vadayim Tzurahu. Right? I think better to say, here he thinks that Tzura is a technical term which applies to fish.
That's
the only way you can distinguish the three.
I think
why does our cone get its own category? Must be because it's a fish.
It works when you look at Mazal as a category of stuff in the sky, and then Partouf is a category of stuff on land, and then Surah is a category of stuff.
Those are the three categories in the
Pasuk,
right?
But Rashi
Please,
has it as a Mazal, that's the point.
Twisting the meaning of Surah around its head.
All right. I'm going to be agnostic on this one, right? I just think the point here just is to check that is that if you read Rashi without a Gemara in front of you, then you can just say, oh, nice, the Gemara called the Surah, right? That's what, you have to figure out where it fits in the Gemara. It doesn't fit anywhere, so that's a big issue. So it might be that it's a different gear set. It might be that he's saying one of the explanations you're saying. Okay, so now we go on the Gemara. Amar kol mazal mutarin chutz mimazal chamul levana. Right, all mazal right to hachiv mayaskinan. So when Rosh Hashanah said Kol Mazalot Mutarin Chutz Mimazal Chamul Vana, so the Gemara says, what is this talking about? The Gemara's first Havamin is Be'oseh, and Rashi says Rashi translates Oseh as Litzairan. Okay, why does Rashi translate Oseh as Litzairan? That's what Rashi's doing, right? He's translating Oseh. Why is he doing this?
That's what it is.
As opposed to what?
So that you could be 3, you would require a independent 3D whatever.
Okay, right. So Rashi
paint the symbol on something else, and that's equally.
Right. Okay, so Rashi is saying that when the Gemara says all mazalot mutarin, so Rashi says when the Gemara says that means for now that is the mutarin la'asot. And Rashi says, what we mean by mutarin la'asot means that it's mutar l'tayerotam, but not necessarily to do what, right? Not necessarily to sculpt them? That's what Rashi says l'tayeran? To tell you that it's only mutar to draw them because they don't have depth?
No, because I think he's doing this for later on in the Gemara.
Yeah.
And once we get to Moshe, right?
Yeah.
Right? These are, right? We're talking about, right? I mean, he's defined these surot as not necessarily something, right, that's a 3D representation of the sun, right? It could be a kli with a sun on it.
Yeah.
Right, so he has to clarify that point.
No, but is there, why does he have to clarify? He's explaining the heter, right? He's defining, it's mutter to make them. So if mutter to make them means mutter to make them in any form whatsoever, then he doesn't need to explain anything. Right.
Except that's not the
context. So you think he's doing it in or just because he wants you to understand that we're only talking about Caleb and we're not talking about freestanding objects.
Which is how he understands what we're doing.
Okay.
Remember, he assumes that these prizes are brought in to be in conversation with the Mishnah, and if the Mishnah is talking about Caleb, then so is this. Right, even though that's not clear from the brizos. Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And what? And why does it matter? Why does it matter him that this is true?
I'm not convinced it has to matter to the exclusion of other things. It just is true.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it could be just a clarification. I'm not convinced. Right? It could be, but I'm not convinced.
So let's get to the Rashi Elochita Be'oseh. Right. So Rashi says the Elochita Be'oseh. Dechol partzifin kegon chaya behema mutar l'tzairan. So there again, he has to translate Oseh as tayar. We already know the context.
Well, he has to use some verb.
Elapshita, de heter kol partzifin be'oseh. All right, what do you want to say, Emily?
Better if you put a verb.
Yeah.
When we say, Ilima the Osa, the high mutarin, the Ka'amar, and the Carlos Iran, the Ka'amar, does that mean that we established this somewhere else, that it's Mutarlos Iran?
No, it's that Kalam has a lot mutarin, right? The statement of the Gemara is Kalam has a lot mutarin.
But not Osayer, just as
mutarin. Well, so Rashi, so Ilima be Osa, right? So Rashi translates Ilima be Osa as Ilima be Mitzayer. That's right. I'm trying to phrase. Rashi, Rashi often just replaces verbs. Right? So here Rashi consistently replaces the verb with oseh and mitzayer. So Jonathan's saying that he's just doing that to tell you that Rav Sheshet is actually just being mefarish to the Mishnah, and I'm suggesting he's doing it because he thinks that the halacha is otherwise. He thinks that it's asur to make three-dimensional, right, to make three-dimensional portraits of all these things. And the only reason the Gemara can suggest kolam hazalot mutarin is because we're drawing it, because we're talking about drawing.
But then we also say that but then we reject that both.
Yeah.
So then you're not allowed to draw it.
Well, no, we have to figure, right? Yes, it may be in the end, right? Maybe in the end, Rashi thinks that it's also to draw these things. Perfectly
fine.
It's not
being more meagre, it's being more humble.
That's right. No, Rashi's limiting the heter, right? If we just said mutarin meant oseh, we would have thought it meant it anyway. Rashi comes along and says, no, mutarin doesn't mean to make it any way you want. It only means letzayer. Okay, right? And then again, when the Rashi says elapshita be'oseh, so here again, right, the point is you can't read the Rashi elapshita be'oseh dechol ha'partufim. It doesn't make any sense at all, but it's not grammatically correct. Right, you have to replace the word pshita be'oseh with Rashi's words, right? So the way to read the Gemara according to Rashi is ela, right, ela pshita dechol ha'partufim, kigon dechayu behema, mutar l'tzairan.
Right, which means that the reason you need a verb there is because he's replacing it.
Yes.
That's what. Right.
But he goes out of his way.
Right, but I don't think it's I don't think he's making a halachic point, or necessarily, I don't think he's completely making a halachic point. The whole point is that we are talking about kelim, right, which is not, right, oseh is a weird word to use if we're talking about kelim, but that is what we're talking about, right? Oseh would normally mean to make a kli, which is not the context. Right, because we're talking about putting.
I understand that you could raise your exegesis halachically. I'm trying to make the opposite contention. We'll see which one bears out. I don't think it's muslim. The key point I want to make methodologically is get into this habit of constantly replacing the words of the Gemara with Rashi, as opposed to reading Rashi as or putting Rashi in between the Gemaras, as opposed to trying to read the Gemara as part of Rashi. Right, the Gemara is a given. Right, the only thing that matters in Rashi are what he changes or what he adds. Right, that's the ongoing methodological point. You have to figure out which words are here, right? And this Rashi elapshita be'oseh, right? So really, again, elapshita is in the Gemara, right? Then he inserts the kol part tefin kigon chaya behema mutar before the word oseh, and then he replaces the word oseh with l'tzairan. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Okay. So in the beginning of the Gemara, where Amar Rabbi and the prophet told not to say halachah, and the answer was halachah in that part.
Yeah.
Right. So are you saying that earlier it was referring to painting it as well? I thought we established that it meant making it.
Well, one is yatar and one is tayar, right? What's going on in that Rashi is that he keeps on, that Rashi too keeps on translating meitar as mitzayer.
Meitar as mitzayer. So according to Rashi, that wasn't referring to creation.
Because Rashi is talking about the, right, I think you're right, right, Rashi is saying, this is why you painted it on the kli. Not this is why you made the kli, but this is why you painted it on the kli.
So he's not talking about creating.
I don't think that's right. I think that you're right. I don't think he's talking about casting the kli. He's talking about painting the picture.
That's very radically different.
All right. Try and figure out if we can do it or not. All right. Good catch. Okay. So we got rid of the fish. Fine. Right. So here, Rashi says, Iti bidmut omdin etzli. So I asked you, what is this Rashi added to our understanding? So first of all, what line of the Gemara is Rashi explaining? Which Rashi? Yeah, which teaches you what? Good. So what are the Shamashayim and Shamshin Lepanai
the
Marom according to Rashi?
They're the ones that are with God.
They're the ones that are with God.
Standing
with God. Standing with God. Right. So what words? Right. So what is right? What is Rashi? What words does Rashi add in?
Well, bidmut is kibbutz.
Yeah.
Omdin is added, and etzli is a reformulation of lifanai.
Okay. Good. So Rashi. So right, we would say Rashi translates lifanai as omdim etzli. Right, that was, right, that's what he, right, and the question is, what does he get, what does he gain by that? Right, why doesn't Rashi just say, right, why doesn't he say, could, right, could, why doesn't he just say, translate, like, what does he translate at all, right, what's he adding? It says, k'dmut sham shem sham shem lefanai b'marom, right, so what is, what, why does Rashi have to add in the word omdodes pli, yeah?
It could be he's just explaining the logic of the drasha, it might just not be immediately apparent that et would mean sham shem shem lefanai b'marom.
Uh-huh.
Because Lifanai is not, I mean,
ET
is with me, not in front of me.
So he's moving you from ET to
Lifanai. And we'll talk through ET, right? It's not immediately apparent that, like, ET could serve as a noun, right? That's right.
Okay. So he, so you think he's only...
He says ha'omdi nestli, you know, it is a noun.
So he's only translating the word, he's only translating the word ET.
And he's explaining how we got from there to Lifanai.
And how we get the word from Lifanai is ET means, ET means bidmut, Ha'omdin nesli. So lota. So right. So really, right. Lota asun. Lota asun bidmut. Okay. Let's leave it at that for now. So what are we? So what things are omade at etzel God? What things are omade at etzel God? In this Gemara, narrowly. What is? Mazalot. Okay, right. So Rashi tells us is that we, right, mazalot are things that are made etzel God. Right, that's an interesting theological claim. I didn't know what mazalot were. Right, now I know that mazalot are things that are made etzel God. Fine. Okay, so we go elapshita beostel. We've already done. Right, so we get right. So these are mutter v'afagav the shor v'ari v'nesher shamashav shel malahin. Right, so it turns out it's mutter and all the parts of fin are mutter to draw. Av Rashi says it's not mutter to draw the shor and the aryeh and the nesher and the shamashav shel malahein. But that's okay because drawing each of them individually is not the same as drawing all four of them together. Okay, so right, so Rashi tells you right that it's pashut, right? Since we already know that it's usher to draw shamashim. And Rashi thinks that but Rashi also knows somehow previously that it's also usher to draw the chayot. So mishamshim can't be exclusively mazalot; it also has to include chayot. Right? And those Rashi says absolutely it's usher to draw chayot, but drawing parts tufin is never going to add up to chayot because here you're only drawing the face. Fine. Rahuna Brady Yeshua, right, so Rashi has to throw that in because we don't know what Yeshua says yet. Okay, what Dmut Sarot Levano, what is that Rashi adding? What was the other Girsa? Yeah? Could have been the mazalot levanot.
Yeah.
Interesting. Any have another idea? So the only other girsa that I can find is a whole long discussion, and most of the Rishonim believe that this is the girsa that Rashi is talking about, is it says levanot as opposed to levana. And they have all sorts of explanations as to why it's levanot as opposed to levana. I want to suggest that that's not true, and it actually is that Rashi is that the word tzurot was missing. Or the word dimut. I would suggest that the interesting thing is dimut tirot levanot is a right sounds like a redundant term. Either it's a dimut or a tira. Who needs both? And if Rashi tells you it's dimut tirot levanot, why does Rashi do that? Because of the Rashi on Shef Sharla Sot Kimotan and Ef Sharla Sot Kimotan. Right, where Rashi tells you that right, Esher Lasot Kimotan Mamash. Right, but other things, Yeshar Lasot Matan El Tziur Dugmatan. Okay, so I think that there's something going on with the Rashi here. But the interesting question is how you balance this with the Rashi that insists that Levana in the Mishnah was a Mazal and not a Dmutzura. Right, Rashi and the Mishnah went out of his way to tell you that the Mishnah is not talking about a depiction of the moon. It's talking about the mazal of the moon. So let's take in the parish, right? Rashi goes out of his way here. Let's start with the given. The given is that Rav Gamliel didn't show the witnesses a picture of an old man on the throne. Right? So we know that the Mutzurot Levanot, whatever Rav Gamliel showed people, were images of actual moons. And yet Rashi on the Mishnah goes out of his way to say that we're not talking about an actual moon, we're talking about a mazal. Right, so the exegetical challenge is why does Rashi feel compelled to explain the Mishnah, right? Our Mishnah as talking about a different case than Rav Gamliel. Okay, right. Yeah. Okay, but why does one of them have to be symbolic? Why does one of them have to be symbolic and one is right? Why can't he say? Okay, so we go back to that. Fine. Okay, that's really all I wanted to gather, Rashi, and you can figure out for yourselves what you think the overall pshat of Rashi in the sugya is. Okay, so the next thing we had Rashi, we had the Raivi, which was just there to give you the realize that, you know what, somebody said what we thought that Chomri Matnita means. But the Rashbam has this. Right, Rashi says it's just about chumras, right? Chomer, and the Rashbam says it's right. The Rashbam says it's kamin chomer, and the Ravitz actually says it's the chumras. Okay, right. So then we have the first Tosfa, which addresses the question of why Rashi has to save Rabbanan Hi, and mentions the positions both ways. Right, and then we have the. Right, then we have the Tosfos HaRosh, Alama Tanya Kol HaPartzufin Maturin Chutzmi Partzuf Adam. Okay, so Tosfos plays the whole game of what the Okimdas are, but there's one key axis that matters in the sugya. Okay, this Tosfos presents the two sides of the question. We know something about Abaye. Right, that Abaye in the previous sugya, right, in the second, right, the middle sugya, the one that previously has been eliminated from the halachic discussion, right. So we should go back there, right, to make sure we all have it. So on the statement kol mazalot mutarin chutz mazal chamah levona, right. So Abaye said that the outcome of that is that case is talking about bi'oseh. The resha and the seifa are both us. Are both usher lasot, and right, they're only talking about a heter of finding it. But Abaye said the middle case. Abaye said the middle case. Partzufin. Sorry, the case called partzufin mitarin. Abaye says the call of partzufin mitarin is talking about an oset. It's actually permitted to make all partzufin except for partzuf adam. Rava disagrees, and says the statement call of partzufin mitarin chutz mi partzuf adam. Is not talking about Oseh, but it's talking about Motzi, and it's right according to Rabbi Yehuda, who thinks that there are particular images of a human being that are likely to have been worshipped. Okay, here's where if we chart on the board, right? We know what Abaye says that all parts of Fina is mutar except for the human parts of. That means to make. Meaning that according to Abaye, it is ineluctable that you can't avoid saying that it is forbidden to be oseh a human partzuf. And we know that according to Abaye. And we know that Rava says no. What the statement actually says is... Pardon?
Specifically,
as a parish on that statement. Yes. Abaye says if you accept the claim, kol partzufin mitarin chutz mi partzuf adam, Abaye says that statement means that you cannot make a partzuf, right, cannot make a partzuf adam. Rava comes along and says, no, that's not what that statement means. What that statement means is that if you find a partzuf adam that meets the criteria set out by Rabbi Yehuda, you have to assume it was worship. Right? Okay. So the question that leaves then is, what does Abaye think about making a human partzuf? Sorry, what does Rava think about making a human partzuf? And so much of the subsequent halachic discussion revolves around that question. Do you say that because Rava doesn't apply that statement to Oseh, it actually means nothing and Rava has no halachic disagreement with Abaye, that's one possibility, right? They're just arguing about the context of this statement. But really Rava and Abaye are in a perfect agreement. Or do you say that Rava disagrees with Abaye's statement? And if you say that Rava disagrees with Abaye's statement, does he disagree with it because he thinks that it can't be true that you can make all the others? Or because it's not, right? Really, how can you say kol ha-partzufim mitarin? There are lots of partzufim that it's usher to make. Or is it because he doesn't think that the isur against human beings is true? Why can't you make a human partzuf? Right? So much of the technical halachic discussion revolves around that issue. What is Rava's position? And you have three options. Rava's position is exactly the same as Abaye's. Rava's position is more machmir than Abaye's. Rava's position is more mekel than Abaye's. Now, for this, there's almost no evidence.
The reason that it possibly becomes so important is because people possibly like Rava.
Well, then there's a second stage question, right? It is generally easier to paskin like, right? And generally we say that a machlok is Rava and Abaye, Rava wins. But you don't have to. Right? Here you can, right? Because if you say that Rava disagrees with Abaye, but Abaye is supported by the drasha of ETOT, right? Then you have the option to paskin like Abaye against Rava, because you're not paskin like Abaye against Rava, you're paskin like Abaye and this statement against Rava.
So the assumption in Pagnizu Rishonim is if Rava says that we will pass in Abaye, help Sakavasa, like Rava Gabe Abaye.
So let's talk. So what's going on in this Tosfot, right, is a very common, I think, Ashkenazi phenomenon, which is that there is a regnant practice. There's a practice that everybody has pictures. That, right, the rumor goes about that Rav Natan justified this practice. Those people who are happy to justify popular practice, right, will say, look, Rav Natan allowed it. Those people who don't like this practice will have to, right, to argue the Rav Natan or even deny the Rav Natan ever existed. Right, we don't know. Right, but I do think that it's general. I have a general thesis, which I don't know is demonstrable, but I tend to think that Rav Natan was not actually a wildly creative parshan for the heck of it. I think that almost all of Rav Natan's chiddushim are directly nogea to a major heter of his that had major societal ramifications. Rav Natan regularly gave perfectly straightforward shurim, right? But when it came to psak, all of a sudden Rav Natan had these huge shoulders. It's very hard to find a radical, trivial chiddush Rav Natan. There are post-game like Rav Shlomo Kluger will say wild things about anything, right? Any sugya, Rav Shlomo Kluger will say something wildly creative with huge implications, and right, it could be against popular practice, it could be with popular practice, it doesn't matter, because he was a wildly creative figure. There are some people who will never say anything, right, will never say anything exciting whatsoever, or even if they're exciting post-game, the way they will be exciting post-game is by saying that this is what the Gemara means, but there's some way the Gemara doesn't apply to us. Rav Devasi Hoffman is exactly right, yes. Whereas Rav Tam says, let's reread the Gemara. But I want to suggest that he pretty much only does this when he has a critical halacha lamasa issue at stake. Right? Now that requires, and this is what it takes Rav Tam's shoulders, it requires claiming that the Gemara has a drasha which exists only according to Abaye. And the whole drasha of Lo Tasini T.O.T. is only according to Abaye, and we don't usually suggest that a drasha exists only Amoraically to justify such a position.
Well, now that we have Pirkei
Du
Abaye, I guess.
Yeah. So what's Pirkei Du Abaye mean? So that changes an old girsos, right? You have to be careful what that means, right? So that part of this gets connected too, right? Those people who read this way will be much more likely to read me Pirkei Du Abaye. Those people who want to paskin like Abaye will be much less likely to change it because they want another figure to support it. Right? So this is one of the areas where girsa and interpretation are intimately connected, because whether you understand this as just another support for Abaye, right, or you understand it as a brisa supporting it, which is how other people understand it, right? Particularly, right, then you have the other position which claims that kol partufin miturin chutz mitzurat adam is the same thing as this, right? Then we're right, so it's the same brisa, right? So what are the right? Right, so you have right, you have the right, you have that issue, right? So the Rebbe of the Amari Brona, who I think is the Riha Zaken, said, so Amari Brona quotes him as saying he doesn't understand, right? Because if you quote a drasha, somebody should right, it's not true, somebody should object it, and since nobody objected to it, it sounds like even though the Gemara. So here's what we're playing out exegetically. The Gemara presents that drasha as a response to a kushya on Abaye. Right? So the likely Rabbeinu Tam position is, since the Gemara presents it as a response to a kushya on Abaye, without the kushya we'd never say it.
Who do you think Rabbi Brona's Rebbe was?
I think it's the Rebbe, isn't it? I think at least there's another place where Rebbe becomes the Riha Zaken in his writing. In his writing. So then,
he's late.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, he's quote, but it's not him, right? He's quoting a Tosfot, and that Tosfot is said nearly. But I don't know. Can look at, I know there's one place where it's equivalent.
Yeah, he's lived from 1400 to 1480.
So maybe quoting earlier Tosfot.
Right. He's a student of Israel, the author of
yeah. So I don't think the Rebbe here means
and
his Rebbe directly. Then I think it means I think he's just quoting an earlier Tosfot which said that. Because I think this is the Riyah. I think you'll find this in the whole, that you'll find this in all the other tests that is the Riyah. I think, but I could be. it's a pretty authoritative late Rebbe otherwise. I think he's just quoting the language of the Riyah, but I could be wrong. Any case, so but I think the issue in the sugya is right, is whether it's the same kind of issue we saw before, is whether you assume that this drasha is part of a live conversation, in which case it is only developed in response to the kushya, or whether you see it as the stam as bringing it into the conversation, in which case, okay, that was our excuse for bringing it here, but what that doesn't mean is not true, right? So Rabbeinu Tam, or the position identified by Rabbeinu Tam here, takes the position that the drasha, right, that the drasha was developed for the right to respond to the kushya. So if you're not a baye, there's no kushya. What's the problem? And right, and the position associated with the person identified as the Rebbe, the Tosafot Mari Brona, says that no, right? The brisa pre-existed the sugya, or the memory pre-existed the sugya, right? So the same issue shows up over and over again, and you have these, right? So you have these set positions, and here you have these set positions in which there's some people who seem to assume that partufei adam are mutar, and some people who seem to assume that partufei adam are hopelessly. Right, are hopelessly asur, and then you have to decide for yourself whether you think this is likely to have been what you think generated this machloket, and to what degree you think it could have been affected by what kind of decorations they had on the machzorim they saw when they grew up, or whether they had artists in the family, and it may not matter to you at all, because even if that's why they came up with it, but you live in a culture where you think the issue is totally open. I would say, I don't know. We live in a culture where this is really starting to happen now, where we have all these pictures. You know, where you have the movement of the pictures of faces and things like that. But one of the interesting things is, you know, when people started recovering European right medieval European haggadot, they were kind of shocking because they didn't seem to care about all this, right, about this, and they drew people. And pardon? Yeah, we have all these haggadahs, right? All these haggadahs and decorations. So
the question is, was the birth an attempt to get out of, right, Partufa?
Yeah, yeah. Right? So we have enough of the Tshuva record to know that there were places where haggadot with personal decorations would have been, you know, with human decorations would have been greeted without comment, and places where they would have been thrown out. Right? So this halachic debate also, you know, and it may depend on who the dominant bookseller was. Like right now, right?
Well,
this issue. Vice versa, right? So you know, that's a change, right? Right now, if Art Scroll decided to start doing this, right? So maybe they would line up one or two poskim, and it'd be very hard for people to condemn Art Scroll. And the people tried it, right? They backed it a few, right? You know that worked. Right? But I think it'd be hard-pressed to claim that Eretz Yisrael is Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, Eretz Yisrael has no interest in getting even 10% of the population to think that about them, even if they could carry it off. So, right, the same kind of issues may have gone on. May have gone on there. Right. So many of the other issues that we've seen will show up in Tosa. We have the questions about which answers for Rabbi Gamliel show up. We have the attempt to put in chumras even though you acknowledge they're not the halacha, and you have the interesting question of whether we think that the stars in the heavens are belait, shokeah, or just exactly even. Which depends to some degree on whether it's a question of perception. I don't know. Do you perceive the stars as flat or as belait? I don't know. Right? Maybe it all depends on how many Van Goghs you've seen. I'm really not sure. It's a fascinating thing. What is the rakia? Right, such that we can determine whether we see the sun or the moon as belait. Which way do you see it?
I don't know.
What about you, Ora? What do you think? Is the moon belait, or is the moon shokeah, or is the moon just hanging there, just painted on? All right. Take a look out. Right. Well, so you have two variables, right? One is the way it appears, the way it actually is, and the other is what do you see? Right? What kind of depth perception do you have?
Well, before we even get to that, I'm assuming that the Baalei didn't think they were flat, and therefore would have changed their opinion had they known.
What about Shkia with the sun and the Titan?
They knew it wasn't flat.
I don't think it was. Well, so that was an interesting question. They say it wasn't flat. So what is that, right? So what does belait mean even? Does it mean flat? Does non-belait mean not flat? So what is shakua? If non-belait means flat, what is shakua?
I mean, it's not flat in the other direction.
Not flat in the other, but you think, you know, there was a havmina that the moon was convex?
It was concave.
Concave, do you think so? I wonder if it's not, doesn't mean relative to the plane. Right, is it,
the
right?
Plane of
is it encased in its sphere? So it just moves along. It just moves within its own within its own sphere, or does it stick out, or does it move on the surface of its plane? Right, because all. Okay,
then it wouldn't be shokeah. It would just be.
Or on the inside surface, or on the outside surface.
No, like shokeah should be going in.
I don't know. I wonder if there isn't, right, if they don't have an image that there's a substratum which the moon moves in. Right, it's not moving in vacuum. Right, it's moving on one of the spheres. And the question is, what's the relationship of the moon, right, of the moon to the sphere, right, to the sphere on which it rotates, to the sphere on which it rotates, on which it orbits.
It's not
shokeah. Shokeah means sticking in this way, and belait means sticking out that way. That's just relative to our perception. Is it going in or is it going out? Is it impressed? Is it impressed into the sphere? Add it up. Look at that. Yeah, this is beyond my confidence. Right. So I just had fun underlining all the lines in Rishonim where they say it's the latest shokeah, it's neither. So you can make your own position of that. Right. In the Ramban, then I just wanted you to see again how there are some Rishonim from Belait Shokeah is the key issue. Pretty much everybody except for the Ra seems to think right now that Belait and Shokeah are the same. Are the same issue. You can see how different Baalei Tosfos is, right? You know, so let's say the regular Tosfos on the Daf say that Berakia Shokinheim, but the Tosfos Rosh says Nirin Shokin, right? Whereas the Ramban says Bivolei Kein Levanah Berakia, right? So we have people who think that it is Shokeah, people who think it looks Shokeah, and people who think it is Belait. So take your pick. I also wanted you to get in the notion that, you know, there seems to be a machloket about whether angels have wings or not. The Rebbe doesn't think angels have wings, apparently. This messes up a really great movie, but we have to live with it. Unless the Rebbe holds that angels sometimes have wings and sometimes they don't. So, right? So, therefore, it's us who draw them either way, because right, you can't even draw Clarence before he gets his wings. Nobody?
It's a wonderful life.
It's a wonderful life, of course. No? All right. We'll have a class trip sometime other than December 25th. That's my general policy. I don't watch those movies. I don't watch those movies in late December. Say, because maybe they're nevad in Palma Chad Bashana, but maybe that's maybe that over there. Okay. Then what we get in the Mikayos space is you start seeing the and the Ritzvahs, you start seeing the contemporary contemporary ramifications where people start talking about crosses. And then, right, the fun position of, that in the Mikayos space that angels have to have exactly, right, they have to have all their wings, not just enough to have. Then you have you start having the cool exegetical approaches to the cool exegetical approaches to the Lota Suniti. So we're in the Luke Yosef now, where he says, the Katavi Tila Midrash Oti Kilomar Divrei Moshe Lota Asun Surati Hitzurat Adam Beraglayim V'Yadayim V'Einayim. Right, I thought that was wonderful. Right, Lota Suniti is not God at all. I mean, don't make an image like Moshe. I thought that was one of the coolest moves that a philosopher could pull off. Now that runs into slight problems with how you get Lota Suniti to mean Hamshamashim, right? Because now it's not enough that E.T., if we want to say you have discretion as to what E.T. means, right, as to which kind of Shamashim, but now we have to change the grammatical antecedent of E.T. that when it talks about human beings, the antecedent is Moshe. When it talks about Shamashim Mador Elyon, I don't think it's talking about the Shamashim serving with Moshe. Yeah, Moshe went up to Shemayim, right? So he saw all the Malachim, right? This is what he said. It's very hard to believe. This strikes me as just as somebody who's under tremendous philosophic pressure, and this was the clever chop he came up with. But it's a desperation move, I think. Okay, so then we get to the last Rashba. Mishan Ranglil Acherim Asulo. The cause of a Rashba, the Ranglil Sover the Lashra Torah Dmus Shamshim Maram Kish Asim Goyim Mutal Yisrael Lekayim Aneslo Haynu Mishum. And here we get back to my Ra. Haynu Mishum She'ein Asuyin Litashmish. Right, you'll get this is the last paragraph on the Nimukayos. Right, so he has his categorization of what's mutter because of a cherem asuim lo. Rav Gamliel holds that the Torah did not forbid the shamshim marom when made by non-Jews, and therefore Jews can keep these things even though they can't make them. Why? Ha'ina mishum she'ein asuim l'tashmish. Avo demus shamashe olam ha'tachton kigon tovnir heichal v'tavnir azara u'menara afilu kish acherem asur lo asire li'ishtamishe behu. Dehani l'tashmishe avidei v'derech tashmishan asra Torah, and we have a new drasha, v'hachi darshinan lo ta'asu niti, lo ta'asu l'tashmishchem. Zimut shimshi. And maybe, afilu asiya gredasab lo tashmishasir. Okay, right, so the Rashba gives you the drasha behind that position. He makes it up. No Gemara ever said anything about, right, lo ta'asun l'tash mishchem, but he has a new drasha, lo ta'asun l'tash mishchem, which he considers the possibility that there are things that it is forbidden to use but not to make because of lo ta'asun iti. Maybe asiyah is also forbidden, which should make you say, somebody who says that tashmish is certainly usur, but asiya may be asur, is the kind of person who could say, if the asiya is asur, kal v'chomer, the tashmish. Right, well, the difference between the ra'ah and the rashbas I'm citing is that the ra'ah assumed the drusha meant asiya. Right, but the rationale was tashmish. So the ra'ah says, if the asiya is asur, which doesn't make any sense, then kal v'chomer, the tashmish, which makes sense. Whereas the Rashba says, no, maybe the Asiyah is not Asur, because he just made the Pasuk go directly to the Tashmish. Okay, yes, he did.
I mean, unless you say that, right, the Tashmish of the Tashmish of the Tashmish is the really of the Ran, and, right, it could just be considered obvious, right, that the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, right, Tashmish would really be the big deal, and Asiyah would be like the big deal.
Right.
That would be obvious to everyone.
Yeah, no, so I should point out, the Rashba, the Gamliel suffered lo asra Torah d'mut shamshe b'marom, kesh asim goyim, Umutr lishrol lekayim natzol. Haini mishum she'en asuyin litashmish. Right, if they were usable, then of course, right, then of course it would be usher, because the whole problem is using shamashim. But for those shamashim, there's no.
You're quoting the Ra'ah there?
According to the Rashba. Rashba says the reason that shamashim marom, you can keep them, is because they're not asuyim litashmish. Right, so the question is, can you conceive of a way in which you are mishum? If you could use them, then it would be usher. But it's mutter to keep them because there's no way to use them.
Right, except that the Ra'ah, if we'll remember, never offered Tashmish.
What do you mean? So we're going back to the same argument, you mean? All right. I want to suggest that you have, right, that what you have here is, right, is evidence that the...
Right, it's the Ra'ah, by the way, that says, Kivan she'en asuyin l'tashmish, lo asarat ra'ah, elo asiyat
san. Right. Okay.
So that's, right... The run is just as easy a source
of that. So what the Rashba contributes is a drasha, right? Which I suggest, right, that it becomes so obvious that tashmish is the only issue that you can even make the pasuk mean that. Right, that's what I think is right. So I think that you have a whole strand in which avodah zarah is only relevant to rabbanan, right? To the point where you don't, right, where you even. You might say, well, if we're really worried about Tashmish, so why is the Asiyah the issue? Why is the Asiyah the issue in the Pasuk? So the Asiyah is not the issue in the Pasuk. Right? That's how far it went. That people entertained the possibility that the Drasha of Lo Ta'asuni Ti could create a category of things that is permitted to make but Asur to use. Right? Right, they weren't sure at the end that really that far lo tasun means don't use it, but it's fine to make it, right? That you can see, it says you have an epsher, right? Maybe I can't, right? Maybe I can't do that. And this is influenced by the Gemara of Asiya Grei Dasa Mishari, right? That's what he's doing here. He's channeling the language of the Gemara.
That's Asiya Grei Dasa as opposed to Asiya with another intention, right? So this is Asiya Gredasa as opposed to Lo Ta'asu Tashmishchem, and before, right, it's Asiya Gredasa as opposed to Asiya in order to obey. In neither place is it necessarily Asiya as opposed to the actual act of using it, or the actual act of Avoda. I mean, there's no Havamina in the Gemara that Avoda is okay.
No, there's no Havamina in the Gemara that Avoda is okay. That's certainly true. Okay, and the Rishta gives you a whole set of new... Right, a whole new distinctions. He tells you what he thinks the Girsit, right? But the Rif has this fun thing, right? He's not Hasim Dumut Turos Levana, King Goris Rashi. Umanda Goris Levanot, right? So the Rif has Rashi's Girsit reversed. Right? He thinks the issue is Levana Levanot, and he thinks Rashi was Goris Levana, as opposed to Levanot, and goes to a whole explanation of why that's so. Nunu, yes?
Okay. Maybe this is a really basic question, but. Uh-huh.
These interpretations, they compatible with each other?
Right.
I think that there are two radically different approaches. One of which sees the Deoraita issue as an Avodah Zarah issue, right, which has to figure out what's going on with the Beit HaMikdash, and one of which sees the entire issue as an Ela. So I'm framing it conceptually as an Avodah Zarah versus an Ela question.
But either way, it's saying this is a pasuk, and then we're going to say what the Deoraita is.
Yeah. Right, and then the second issue, which even the people who think it's only Me'ilah issue have to deal with a chashad of a Dazar issue. Right, but yeah, I think that he's totally reorienting the Deraisa.
That's not.
We'll see that the Rambam does worse. We'll see that the Rambam does worse, because at least so far we've assumed that when the Gemara quotes the Drasha, it means it.
So did he get this
from somewhere? His Rebbe. We can see the whole Masoret going back to the Shiltos, right? Read through the whole Shilta, nobody thought about Avodah Zarah. So this Bryce also the Gemara says, Lo Ta'asuni Ti, Kidmut Shamshi. Right? Where did the word Shamashim come from? They must have understood it as. E.T. means the ones who stand with me to serve me. Yes, Rachel.
Sorry, okay, I just wanted to clarify. I'm a little confused. You said before, so by this new drasha,
according to that,
mm-hmm.
we could not make it, but keep it and use it?
No, we could...
The exact opposite?
The exact opposite. He thinks that the drush of Lo Tasuni Ti... You can't use it.
You can't use it, but you can make it. Could you use it, but not for the purpose it's usually used for, or if you think at all...
The interesting question is, what happens if you use it for other purposes?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if he goes so far as to claim that it's mutter to use your model of the Beit HaMikdash as a broom.
Could you get hana from making it?
Even
if you're not going to...
So what does use mean, right? The whole question, right? That's where we have the question of whether
right.
decoration is use or not.
Right.
We'll be using your Beit HaMikdash not as a broom. What do you mean, what's the original way of using
living
your
it?
Living in it. To live in it. Okay.
Wait, how could you make the model of the
Well, you just attach it to a handle. and a dustpan, more likely, okay?
You would need a really big
model. Yeah, yeah, all right. If you had a scale, right, you know, a full-scale model. I agree. I thought, you know, use it as a barn. Beit HaMikdash is not the shulchan. Right? It's a shulchan.
Use it as a
shulchan. Okay, right. So we'll have we're going to have the fun questions that are going to show up. In addition, are going to be when people start really pushing it, is when you start commerce in Christian art. Right, and people are trying to figure out, right, are you really willing to go along to say that even a tzura of something that isn't a avodah zarah is mutter, right? So long as you don't actually worship it. And some people will go that far because it happens that one of the trades that Jews engage in is trading Christian ritual objects. Right, so we already see that already shows up in the Ritva. But the only thing I want to point out in the Ritva now is just on the first page of the Ritva. Right, so I want to find where he says 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth paragraph. On Ora Baya Lo Asra Torah. So we have this new line, Hevi Yodea Shekol HaSugi Hazot. Mashma Hamatorish Mashma. On the page late in the Kedusha HaRitva, on the fourth paragraph, right, he says, Hevi Yodea Shekol HaSugya Hazot Mashma Hamatorish Mashma.
So the word phrase Mashma Hamatorish Mashma, I looked up the helpful Ritva here in the Masada Rav Kook edition, and he has a very helpful footnote on what Mashma Hamatorish Mashma means. Which I shall quote to you verbatim because I do not believe I could formulate it anywhere near as well. So he says is, this is footnote 96, he says, the tevot elu ein perush. This is just simply incomprehensible. Perhaps it is related somehow to fish. But the idea, right, whatever the words are, the idea is meaningful, right? He says, the kamada bay lomar di meha. So he has a new solution in which to solve the Ella problem, which is that Abaye's statements are all tentative statements about what I would say if I only had this brisa. Right, so Abaye doesn't have to change his mind because Abaye knows all. Right, Abaye is part of the conversation, but he's speaking as if he doesn't know the rest of it. But really he does.
So why would he do?
Because it's the only way we can solve the yellow. Right? Abaye is playing his part, right? So right, one interpretation is that the Moksha is playing the Socratic part, and here we have Abaye is playing his role. Oh, really, that Braita? Well, if I only had that Braita, I would have said this. But I know we don't only have that Braita. Why don't you bring out the second Braita? Oh! If I only had that...
That doesn't seem pedagogically effective as opposed to thinking that the Moksha...
This is not a good shot. It's really not a good chat, but it just right. But often the weakness of the answer, right, is important. Right, often weak answers are more important than strong answers, because strong answers you say because right, strong answers you might just really be convinced by them, but weak answers mean that you would rather say this than the alternative. Right, it's actually right, right, and it's really interesting. You know, so weak answers are often really interesting. So here, I think the Ritva points up that. You know that this is really a challenging problem. I don't find this answer at all compelling, but I think you might discover that this is something. I don't find it compelling because I don't tend to read Gemara that way. But it might be if you start looking to discover the Ritva reads 100 sugyas that way, right? And once it, so that's always the rule in grammar, right? If you do it once, it's a problem. But the same phenomenon, if it happens twice, is just a rule. Right? So if he finds another, if he finds one other sugya where it's obvious this way, so then it's just, this is just a standard, right? Issues of style, style is purely a function of what's normal. Yes.
Maybe he thinks Abaye can only hold one drasha of the community at a time.
Except later on he tells you, right, the same person tells you that all these drashas come together and who cares, right? It means all of them, right? So it's hard to say the rishpa himself. So this is all, right, so I want to point out there are many, many issues here where you have not just what this sugya is about, but you have, literary sensibility issues. You have people who are really, really bothered by the notion that lo ta'asuniti means different halakhic things with regard to different objects, right? The people who are really, really bothered by the notion that lo ta'asuniti could ban bolet for some things and not make a and allow shokeah for other things not make a difference. To the point that some people are so bothered by this that they're willing to reduce this to lo mitzrana ketuv ela l'chachamim. Right, that their interest in literary consistency is so great that the only solution they can have for this is to eliminate the literary aspect of it completely and say, we just can't do anything here, right? There's no way to justify this, so we'd rather just claim that this is all random. Right, there are other people who say, what's the problem? There are lots of places where we play games. We have lav shebichlolos, right, where we say, lo tochlul adam means A, don't eat before executing people, and B, don't be a soramura, and C, don't eat before davening. Right, among other things, aside from whatever the issues may be about eating and blood. Right, so some people, right, say this is not an issue. Right, Midrash Halakha is allowed to, right, Midrash Halakha allows you to play exegetical games without regard to consistency. Right, there's no problem with interpreting Pesukim in contradictory ways, Halakha, as long as you can find a different aspect of the Pasuk to perhaps to cling to. And other people say, no, the Drasha has to work. You have to have a meaning, you have to have a translation of the pasuk, right? And so they're reduced to saying, Lim Sarnaka Tuvalu Chachamim, right? So, right? There are people of different visions of Sugyot, and that can tell them as to how to read Abaye and Rava. There are people of different visions of what the Rish is accomplishing. Right? We can see, right? I have a particular vision of Rashi, and that particular vision of Rashi will shape my understanding of what's plausible as an interpretation of Rashi. If you don't share my understanding of Rashi, my understanding of how to read Rashi, and then all sorts of different interpretations of Rashi come up. Right, so I want just to, the broad point I want to make is that there are very few issues that are not heavily affected by broad literary approaches, and this is aside from halachic questions of not just which tradition you belong to, but to what degree you feel compelled to defend popular practice, right? What you think about art, all sorts of things like that, and the challenge is to figure out how you build a language that feels to you compelling and that you think other people ought to listen to when you're aware that there are so many different starting points that are chosen prior to the text that heavily influence the way you're going to understand the text. And now you should take a deeply relaxing 40 minutes because I would like everyone to be fully awake when Chava Evans comes. She is aside from, we'll wait till we turn off the tape. Yeah. Off. Come on. I can never get it on now. I can't get it off. We will be having it probably in the shul because I think that she needs a. Maybe that nothing got recorded today again. Shul, annoy me no end. You have today's recording? Oh, thank you. Okay, any case, I'm really grateful that Chava has agreed to do this and she spent a lot of time doing it. So it would be great if all of us would be fully awake.